Mr. Winston, reel 5.
That he has to join up, though he doesn't want to. He's against war because
Isaac
Marsh,
Rosenberg.
Isaac Rosenberg, because Marsh had threatened that if he doesn't join up, he would stop his £1 a week. Well, that's a form of war.
Form of blackmail, really.
Well, war is blackmail.
Yes, of course it is.
We look how easily you see on television, you see different peoples talking together, and we never dream of saying that man doesn't belong to this country if he lives here, you see. We talk about Germany, we talk about France, we have a common market now. But if you go to Italy or you go to France, you don't feel that you're a stranger. You feel you're different, you have different attitudes, and it's rather exciting, and you want to understand, but you don't want to fight them, do you? And they don't want to fight us, I hope not. So the idea of war is an attitude of the mind and willpower to destroy others, and that's what's happening now.
But I should think during the First World War it would be the same as you were just saying, the Germans didn't want to fight us.
No.
I don't think so. Don't think so.
No.
I think we were on the edge of stopping that war, and it was very carefully manipulated.
When you came from Poland, did you have to change your name when you came to England?
No, I did change my name, or if you call it changing. I changed my name when I married Claire. She had to give up her name, and it was her idea that we have a new mutual name for a new life. But
We
I
only
kept
knocked out, made simplified the name.
simplified it, that's all. There wasn't a change of name in that sense. I just that it was a kind of idealistic expression, that's all.
Oh, I think that's wonderful. When was it that you were married?
We married
During.
just 1915, just
During the war.
yeah, because I knew Claire.
Yes.
I wasn't arrested till 16. 16, that's right.
The reason I asked you about your name was
Do
if you'd been, then I assume you had a name that was obviously Polish, obviously foreign
Yes,
anyway to people who
foreign,
didn't know any better.
yeah.
And was there any trouble then during the war that they would think you were some kind of German sympathizer because
Well,
you had a foreign name?
yes, it's rather interesting, you see. I taught in Wapping, I took on that. I took on after a pretty successful education.
Well, may I go out? He's asking me, he wants to go to the garden. Come on,
Shall we wait for you, Claire? Well, it's rather interesting that there I was in the heart of hooliganism and everything else, with a name that might have been very disturbing, and yet I had no example of it at all. It's rather beautiful. I look back at teaching there, because I was arrested pretty well soon after that. I went on teaching there, and I saw nothing but affection there. I think of it looking back. I'm not a look-backer kind of chap, you know. I don't look back with anger or with love. When I look at a thing, I see it whole. I mean, that's training as being a biographer. And I see it nothing but affection. And what is so interesting, I was just telling you of a group of young people, and that's always been with me. I always used to say to myself when I'm with these bare-legged boys and hungry, I mean, I don't want to describe them now, but they were children who had really nothing to fight for. Their parents had nothing to fight. They were the dregs. Yet, my colleague, next room, you know, these silly schools where you have these classrooms, my colleague who discussed pacifism with me, and I told him that I'm not making my teaching as a plea for exemption, as being social service. So he said, "More fool you." He said, "I'm in this world to get on in the world, and I'm not going to let these people degrade me. I'm going to get on." And then he said, "Look here. Why can't we be..." That's the chap. "Why can't we be friends? I come from Leeds and don't know London. Show me London." It reminds me at this moment of the other three people who asked me to show them London, you know. So I said to him, "I don't know why it is." I said, "I'll take you to the Café Royal. You may think I must have been a bit of a blackguard to choose the Café Royal always, but to me it was a kind of church. We drank our coffee, and a lot of them drank a little more. But there was Augustus John, and I knew them all, Wyndham Lewis, and we were all laughing and talking together, discussing very serious things together. And I took him there. And we went home. I said, "I hope you enjoyed it." He said, "Well, there's nothing much in it. We had coffee and listened to a lot of blah about art and literature." Well, that chappie, within a short time, owned the Café Royal, owned the further hotels like the Athenaeum in near Dover Street, you know. Owned three big hotels, was Lord Mayor of London, an MP for one of the London constituents. His name was Bracewell Smith. He was all those things. I thought, what a genius in self-seeking, you know. It's a marvellous thing that people who want to be rich, who love money, will find the means of becoming rich. Here was a chap in the a school where teachers refused to apply for reaching there, becoming a mayor, and afterwards inviting me to the Café Royal to show his place to me. And all in lovely spirit, you know. And I took him round London, showing him, and every part of London he must have said to himself, "This is going to be mine." And I lacked entirely this sense of self-aggrandizement. I never had it in me. I had opportunities given to me where I could have been wealthy in one go, more or less, or else be a rogue in one go. I don't know how I would have done it. Anyhow, it would have been again an imprisonment of a different kind. But I never understood the psychology of wanting to push oneself. And yet here was this chappie whom I used to hear the voice coming across, if you buggers don't stop talking, I'll swipe your bloody noses and all that kind of thing. And then he used to think me a fool, of course. He said, you're playing the fool with all this conscientious objection, you see. He said, you're just a mug, because you've got no future before you. No girl would ever look at you because you've got nothing to give them. You'll come out of the prison impotent. You'll come out without a future, without a penny in your pocket. And every people will turn their backs on you. He put it like that, you know, which was quite true, of course, quite true. And a person who went, I think Shaw said the right thing. He said that he went to a prison where they had in front, "Abandon hope, all ye who enter here." So he said, I said to the governor, this not shouldn't be on this side of the prison, it should be on the outside. So when they go out, they'll say that, "Abandon hope, all ye." Well, that's true, of course. That's a thing that people don't understand, that the conscientious objector and the pacifist was punished all along. He never had a chance. I really don't know. I've got a beautiful home and very successful children, one a professor, another a great authoress. One of them you've met, who is an examiner in art, in the higher branches of art, that I don't know. There must be that's what I believe in more than ever. There is a lead within one, and I felt it all the time in prison. I don't know if you've seen my book on prison. You haven't, perhaps.
No.
Felt all the time the closeness of somebody, I'm not a religious person, but I can't understand people denying religion.
What did that colleague of yours, that teacher, do during the war?
He taught.
He had an exemption then for teaching?
He wasn't called up. He taught. I think there was a formula, you know. I never went into it, but there was a formula, because how many were we? Maybe the headmaster applied for his exemption because he also wrote a letter for me as well, you see. He must have applied for exemption, being a special difficulty school and unable to get staffing. It was essential, and I think they gave it. I never went into it.
That's something I was wondering about, in fact.